Okay. Questions. Okay. So we were discussing about the fishes the last time, and we were trying to see if I have the fishes represented by the length and the width features, and then I put in all the fishes that I have as points in this space. Then the question that I had was, one question of course that I have is, if I don't really want to have two dimensions, I just want to have one dimension, because I think there are too many dimensions for the fishes, you know, like instead of length and width, can I just have one? And if I only have one, which would I rather give up on? Okay, that's the question. So in some sense, this question is like the feature selection problem. So the idea is that fishes now have a length feature and a width feature. Okay, and if I want to select just a few features, not all two, but just one, let's say, but a subset of them, okay, the question would be, which subset would I choose, which would I give up on? Okay, now, the problem, of course, is I could answer it that way. I could just say, well, you know, among these, maybe, you know, what would you, if you must give up on one of them, which would you rather give up on? It's kind of hard to tell with this data. Okay, had the data been, let's say, had the data been like this, that's the data, let's say, then which would you give up on?
Y-axis.
The y-axis. Do you guys see that? Okay, the point of course is, if you give up on y-axis, if you project it onto this, the variance between the fishes is preserved. Okay, whereas if I project it onto the y-axis, the variance is not preserved as well, because too many fishes seem to have the same y-axis. Okay, presumably what you're trying to do in feature selection, if you now, in fact, you know, in doing feature selection up front, is to keep as much of the variance between entities as possible. Okay, now it turns out that in this case, actually, if I must just take one feature, I would take this. But in this case, really, it turns out this question here is like asking, which eye would you like to lose? Okay, the left one or the right one? Make up your mind very fast. Okay, unless one of your eyes is already screwed up, you probably don't want to answer that question, right? Because both the features are pretty good. So what I would like to then do is, instead of doing feature selection from the exact dimension, so first of all, I hope you understand that the phrase feature selection is connected to the phrase dimensionality reduction. One way of reducing dimensionality is to reduce the number of features. But the phrase dimensionality reduction is more general, okay? Because one way of doing dimensionality reduction is, rather than just say which of the existing features should I give up on, I can change the dimension. So for example, in this particular case, as I was talking last time, I can change the, coordinate axis. Once I change the coordinate axis, then I can ask this question again. Okay? So now what's interesting, of course, is that for this particular data, if I were to change the axis, the best way to change is, of course, you know, if I'm only doing linear transformations of the axis, that means rotation and translation. Okay, then the best way would be, for example, to put the axis like this. You could see it intuitively, because in this axis, the maximum amount of variance is captured. In this axis, second maximum amount of variance is captured. Really, what you would like to do is, if it is three-dimensional data, you would have new three dimensions such that in the first axis, maximum variance, second axis, second maximum variance, third axis, third maximum variance. Okay, if it's n-dimensional data, the same thing. Now, if I were to do this, my previous question now can be asked in a much more interesting way, saying, rather than say, which eye would you like to lose, I could say, if I were to transform your eyes such that you have like a huge big eye on this side and a slightly small eye on this side, then which eye would you like to lose? Then it's easier. Okay? So, in fact, actually, believe it or not, I mean, as crazy as it sounds to talk about which eye would you like to lose, I don't know, enough of you are not old here, but if you become old like me, you would start realizing that although you can see very far away and see whether or not that person is sleeping or not, I can't read a book. Okay? So old people can't read books. You know, they need these glasses. Why? Because the lens does not very quickly adjust to close bifocal. So one way is to wear these glasses, right? And I don't like to wear them normally because I can't see whether or not that guy is sleeping there. But another way that people do actually is to convert one of their eyes such that it does well on the close by reading, and the other eye would be used to do the far away watching. Okay? In such a case, in fact, you can get these kind of crazy surgeries. I don't like anybody to touch my eyes. But if you get that surgery done, then if I ask you, you are a professor, which eye would you like to lose? Then I would say, you know, I mean, okay, forget about the people sleeping in the last row. If I can't read, I'm dead. So I probably want to lose the long sight eye and keep the close sight eye. Okay, so in fact, that kind of a coordinate transformation can be done. What's more interesting is that we will talk about it a little later, but here we only did linear transformation of coordinates. You can actually also talk about nonlinear transformation of coordinates. And that's a much more interesting notion of dimensionality reduction, which is nonlinear dimensionality reduction. Okay? So just to give you an idea about it, for example, if I, in three dimensions, all the points of interest to me happen to fall on a circle in three dimensions. So all the fishes fall on a circle in three-dimensional space. Here is a little circle right there. Now, do you really need all three dimensions to talk about these points? No. You only need less than three dimensions because this is just a little manifold on three dimensions. But the question is, what would be the right coordinate transformation such that in that coordinate transformation you can get by with less than three coordinates? To do that, you need to do nonlinear coordinate transformation. What nonlinear means, x square, y square, root x, y, sine of x, cos of y, all that fun stuff. Okay? Yes. You would never know. I mean, in fact, the point is that you could capture nonlinear dependencies.
Did you ever care about it?
That's a different question. So whether or not you care depends on what are you trying to optimize with respect to. Okay, if you're optimizing with respect to unwashed masses who are using the search engine, they are happy with vector similarity. Okay, but if your question is, can I set up, you know, a corpus where without nonlinear dimensionality reduction you would lose precision and recall? Yes, you can. Okay? So, yes.
I mean, like, doesn't I guess here is that the axes are properly scaled, right? According to the weights. See, I can imagine a situation where if y axis has a lot more weight.
Yeah, no, but I mean, basically you are also scaling the axis, yes. You scale the axis, but rotating the axis as well as scaling them. Okay, and so in this particular case, if I now ask you which dimension would you lose if you must keep one dimension, which would you rather keep? This one, because this has the maximum variance. And the, what would be the second one? That one. Okay. What's more interesting in this particular case, the way I did the coordinate transformation, in this particular case, these two axes are orthogonal. Okay? Normally what that means is you can actually just rank them in the order of most variance, second most variance, third most variance, and then if you are going to take just k dimensions, take the top k. If you're doing k plus 1 dimensions, take the top k plus 1. Okay, now maybe what I really want is not to say k dimensions with k being some number. I want to capture something like up to 80% of the variance. And I want to see how many dimensions do I need to keep so that I would capture up to 80% of the variance. Notice that if I keep all the dimensions, then I will get 100% of the variance. Okay? It turns out that actually this is connected, we'll get to that in a minute, but this is connected to doing eigenvalue decomposition. Okay, so basically if you put this data in a generalized ellipsoid, okay, the closest generalized ellipsoid, then the major and minor axis of that generalized ellipsoid would be given the primary and secondary and tertiary eigenvectors. Okay, and the size of these axes will be corresponding to the eigenvalues themselves. Okay, and furthermore, so it turns out that if you were to take this and compute the principal, the eigenvalues, this will be 1.75, this will be 0.25, and you can essentially show that if you were to just keep the first dimension, then you will keep 1.75, which is lambda 1, which is eigenvalue 1, divided by 1.75 plus 0.25, fraction of the variance. Okay, that would be 87.5% of the variance. And similarly, if I just keep the second one, so basically if I just discard this yellow axis, then I lose 100 minus 87.5% of the variance. That's about 12% of the variance. Not too bad. Whereas you would have lost much more variance if I were to lose either this axis or this axis. I change the axis before I ask the question, which axis are you willing to give up on. This was what we were talking about last time. This is the analysis of the fishes. Okay? This idea is called principal components analysis. So essentially you're trying to compute what are the main axes, what are the major axes and the minor axes of variance. Now, so we got to today's class, and so what we'll ask is, if you can do it for the fish, why can't you do it for the documents? Because fishes were essentially data points in the space of their features, length and width. In fact, by the way, here is an interesting question when I'm here. Suppose I were to now, if you said in my original space of features, if you said, okay, I'll keep this one, not this one, then you could tell me what you ignored. You ignored width, you kept length. These were the features that people gave the fishes in. Now, if in this space you kept this and ignored this, what actually did you keep? What did you keep? So what are you going to tell the guy, you know, the fisherman or the fisherwoman who caught all these fish and gave it to you? And they counted them in terms of length and width. Now you said, well, your fish are all unidimensional. Except the dimension is this red axis. What is this red axis? It's actually some linear combination of the original axis. In this particular case, you can actually see this is x plus y. Okay? So what this is this instead of length and width, it is like size. Now, in the fishy's case, length plus width can be given some kind of an semantic, saying it's a total size. But in some other case, if you are doing documents, this may be the number of instances of the word computer. This may be the number of instances of the word science. This would then be 2 times the number of instances of computer minus 3 times the number of instances of science. What the heck is that? No, the point is the people. You know, you may not be able to explain when you select features in this transformed space, while it has all these nice theoretical properties, it may not be explainable to the users in the loop. If you're trying to explain to your boss, you know, I've decided to think of fishes in just one dimension, your boss would say, which one did you take, length or width? He said, neither. And they say, what do you mean, neither? And then you have to say, well, I actually took, you know, K1 times length minus K2 times width. And they'll say, what the heck is that? You see what I'm saying? So there is this question of explainability of these new features, because these features have no semantics to the user. Users carefully, you know, made these features in the original space. When you do feature selection, which is like a special case of dimensionality reduction, it's more easy to explain because you will tell the expert in the loop, I'm keeping these, I'm losing these. When you do this, it's harder. Okay, so you keep that in mind. Now, if I want to do this for documents, then what I'm going to do is I'm basically going to pick each document would be a point in the space of keywords, in the space of words, right? And then, so this might be the number of instances of the word computer, this might be the number of instances of the word science, this might be the number of instances of the word data, and so on. Okay, now of course, one huge thing that you have to deal with is that, you know, you are used to, this is two dimensions, you can have some intuitions about three dimensions, but most of you haven't dealt with n-dimensional space. Most math works in n-dimensions, but your intuitions, on the other hand, do not work in n-dimensional space. Okay, if you don't believe me this, let me give you an idea before we go there. So suppose in a three dimensions, you have an apple, a spherical apple, and you have a peeler, household peeler, you remove an epsilon peel from the apple. What do you think is the remaining volume? So the apple had some volume V, you removed an epsilon peel from the apple. What do you think will be left in the volume? What percentage do you think of the volume would be left? Close to 90%, 99%, right? If I have a 10,000 dimensional apple, I mean, if I can have a 3-dimensional apple, I can have a 10,000 dimensional apple. If I have a 10,000 dimensional apple, and I just peeled an epsilon width from the 10,000 dimensional apple, how much do you think will be left? Close to 0% of the volume would be left. Close to 0% of the volume will be left. Now, how do you figure this out? Here is the deal. Okay, so if you have a original apple's radius is r, okay, then its volume is proportional to r cube. That's all you care. And if you peel off an epsilon amount, then the remaining volume is r minus epsilon cube. Okay? So the percentage left is r minus epsilon by r power k for the k-dimensional apple. Do you see now what's going on? For three dimensions, r minus epsilon by r, first of all, is less than 1. For three dimensions, a number which is less than 1 is multiplied by itself 3 times, so it will become smaller. For 10,000 dimensions, you're multiplying that number 10,000 times by itself. So you get zero, close to zero. So high dimensional apples are all peel and no core. Did you know this? That's the point when people say intuitions, your intuitions may actually go awry in high dimensions. It's one of the intuitions. For example, here's another thing. What do you think, given if you take two random vectors in higher dimensions, two random vectors in higher dimensions, what is the probability that they would be perpendicular to each other? No, let me complete this first. Again, in three dimensions, you know, the percentage of time, the probability that two random vectors would be perpendicular to each other would be low. But you can show actually, and this is something that you can do it at home, that as the number of dimensions increase, most random pairs of vectors are perpendicular to each other. Most random pairs of vectors are perpendicular to each other, close to perpendicular to each other at any rate. Okay? What that means is the cosine theta is going to say a document is pretty much zero similarity to every other document in the world. Okay? Yes, what's the question? N dimension. Yeah, come to my home, I'll tell you. No, I'm sorry. We can't. It's, you know, mathematics is to imagine these things, right? I mean, so I do not know, I mean, you can see some science fiction movies, but you can only see projections of n-dimensional space onto up to three dimensions. Most of you folks, you know, if I go into your SATs course and GRE course, I'll probably find out that you have trouble enough with three dimensions. Okay? N dimensions are iffy. But the math works. And so because the math works, you tend to think that your intuitions also work.
But I think the n-dimension is already in the data. We
Okay, stop there. Stop there. Let's talk about it outside. That's definitely not true. Okay? N-dimensional space, is, you know, if you, well, three-dimension is a subset of n-dimensional space. That's true, but not vice versa. Unless you get to say that the three-dimensional world is already a subset of this board, what you said doesn't make sense. Okay? Anyway, so when we are going from fishes to documents, the one thing you want to remember is the dimensionality increases significantly. Because each document now is a vector in the space of all terms and a huge number of terms. You know, if it's keywords, maybe there'll be about hundreds of keywords. If you actually put the document in the space of all terms, in the contents of the document, that could be million dimensional space. Okay? Okay, so given that, what we're going to do is basically try to see how can I do this analysis automatically? How can I get this automatically? Now, so if you cannot, so if we have documents as vectors in the space of terms, we want to transform the axis such that the new axes are orthonormal, orthogonal to each other, and they can be ordered in terms of the amount of variation in the document, variance in the documents they capture, so that if I say take k dimensions, you can take the top k dimensions in the order. And then so if you want to just pick k features, you pick the top k in that new space. Okay, now why am I interested in doing this? Why did I do this for the fishes? Because A, in fact, one of the things that you get to do, apart from reducing the dimensionality, you can also make sense of what, you can make sense of which dimensions are correlated with which other dimensions. In the new coordinate space, essentially, the dimensions are going to be the least correlated. Okay? Now, what do you mean by correlation? What we mean is, remember, this is something that you may have done in, so if I have x and y, and I have a bunch of, a cloud of points, x, y points, okay? So if these axes are truly correlated, if I put a cloud of points, how would it look like? It would look like this. Everywhere. The points are all over the place. Okay? If they are correlated, then they would be much smaller region. So for example, you may have things like this. All the points fall in that. That means they're correlated. You see what I'm saying? Okay? So the fact that the fishes look like this in the original space means they are correlated. You know, don't you guys see this? That these are positively correlated. As this is increasing, this is increasing. What you're saying is, for a normal fish, if its length increases, its width also increases. There are crazy fish which are really, really long and really, really thin. But most fish, as the length increases, they become fat. Just like people. Okay? Which means length and width are correlated. So if I tell you something about length, you get to know something about the width. That's what correlation means. Okay? Now, in this space, obviously the points are correlated. This is your SAT level question. If they were not correlated, you would have them all over the place. But once I transform the coordinate axis, in this space, they are least correlated. This is the least correlation you can get. Okay? So you can remove the correlation by doing this. You can remove the correlation to eliminate the dependencies between variables. Computer and science tend to be dependent, because when computer occurs, science occurs. But then you then make them together. You know, you define a new axis called computer plus science. Okay? And then another new axis called computer minus science. And these two would take into account the dependencies, such that the computer plus science will have the most, I mean, would capture the dependencies. Okay? And then you can eliminate dependent variables. You can also reduce noise. Okay? So you can have, so remember the reason we got into this was that malicious Oracle who took the documents, added linearly dependent dimensions, added noise, and gave it to you. And you're doing undoing this. Okay? So, and you can also sort of capture synonymy and polysemy. So if the word computer is sort of functionally close to the word science, you will capture this. If the word computer has multiple meanings, then you might capture this too in terms of this analysis. Okay? So these are all the reasons you want to do it. How would you do it? An operation called singular value decomposition, which is very closely connected to eigenvalue decomposition. Okay? Singular value is basically, singular value decomposition, as we'll see in a minute, is described, is defined for any arbitrary matrix. It doesn't have to be square matrix. Okay? And whereas eigenvalue decomposition, as all of you know, is defined only for square matrices. Furthermore, singular value decomposition, as you will see, is defined, is going to be in such that the eigenvalues would all be real. This is a big deal because, you know, eigenvalues for a normal, the eigenvalues for in the eigen decomposition can be complex numbers. Okay? You can get eigenvalues to be real only under certain conditions. For example, if your matrix is square and symmetric, then you can be guaranteed that the eigenvalues would be positive. Okay? And we'll see that SVD essentially winds up doing eigen decomposition on square symmetric matrices. Starts with the matrix DT. What it does is this. Let me write this down and then we'll see it in a minute. So I'll start with the matrix DT. Okay? Now, if I take DT times DT prime, what do I get? Yeah, I get a nice square matrix whose name is DD. Right? And then if I take DT prime times DT, what do I get? I get another nice little square matrix, okay, which will be TT. Not only are these matrices square, they are symmetric. This can be seen, DD matrix can be seen as correlation between documents. So if D1 is correlated with D2 with certain value, then D2 is correlated with D1 with the same value. The TT is the same. These are the correlations between the terms. Okay? Now that I have two square matrices, I can do eigen decomposition of DD. And I can also do eigen decomposition of TT. It turns out the interesting thing, and I won't show it to you here, but one of the interesting things is both of these will have the same eigenvalues but different eigenvectors. Okay? I will show it to you in a minute on MATLAB, but the theory of how to show it, I have to go into more linear algebra. Okay? So both of these will have the same eigenvalues but will have different eigenvectors. And the eigenvalues for both of these are called the singular. So eigenvalues for both of these, let's say this is lambda 1 to lambda k here, and it will also be lambda 1 to lambda k here. Okay? Then what you will wind up doing is, and let's say the eigenvectors for this decomposition, we'll call them DF. Okay? And the eigenvectors for this decomposition, we'll call them TF. And what I would say is DT will be DF times TF times, the middle one is a diagonal matrix. Remember, if you do the eigen decomposition, the middle one would be a diagonal matrix with eigenvalues, right? Now this would be diagonal matrix, except this will be lambda 1, square root of lambda 1, square root of lambda 2, square root of lambda k. Okay? The reason you take the square roots intuitively is you multiplied a matrix by its own transpose. So in some sense, you squared it. So the eigenvalues of the square, so eigenvalues you get are the eigenvalues for the square. But you are trying to decompose the original matrix DT, and so you take square roots. Okay? Now, so this is singular value decomposition. I'll get into a little bit more details of it, but let's actually try to see why do we do this, and why is singular value decomposition supposed to help in what we are trying to do. Okay, so this slide is ending by saying how do SVD. And I showed you what SVD is from linear algebra perspective. You should be able to do this now. Okay, I'll show more examples, but you should be able to do this now because you know how to get DD, you know how to get the eigenvalue decomposition, you know how to get TT, you know how to get the eigenvalue decomposition, and then you take the eigenvectors of that becomes DF, eigenvectors of this, that becomes TF, and then you take the square root of the eigenvalues of either of the matrices, that's the singular values. So they're called the singular values. Okay. And it's guaranteed that if you multiply these three matrices, you will get this. These are all called decomposition techniques. You take a matrix and you give new matrices such that when you multiply them, you'll get the original matrix back. These are the factors of the matrix. Okay, which is why, in fact, I'm using this word F. So this DF is document in the factor space. TF, terms in the factor space. And this is sort of telling you the importance of the axis of the various factors. Okay, this may not make sense. I'll go into more details and we'll come back to this again. Okay, so if SVD is the solution, as I'm telling you it is, what's the question? What exactly is the question for which SVD became the answer? Okay, so here is the idea. The question that we are trying to solve to understand why SVD becomes the answer, we need to understand what we did to fishes, but in matrix theoretic terms. Okay? The thing that is important, essentially, that's for our discussion, is the rank of a matrix. Notice that a matrix can be seen as a set of column vectors or a set of row vectors. If I give a set of vectors, the rank of that set of vectors is the maximum number of linearly independent vectors. Do you understand what I'm saying? So if I give you, so when I give you a matrix, in essence, I'm giving you a set of row vectors. Or you can think of it as a set of column vectors. Okay. So a matrix really corresponds to a set of vectors. And the rank of a matrix is the maximum number of linearly independent vectors it has.
Right, rank.
What?
The rank.
Wait, a rank basically is the maximum number of linearly independent vectors. Now, if it turns out that this matrix happens to have 15 rows and its rank happens to be 15, that means, in fact, all its rows are linearly independent of each other. If it is a 15-row matrix and it has 3 rank, it means there really were only 3 independent linearly independent vectors. The rest of them are just linear combinations of the first 3. It's not obvious to you when you look at the vectors whether or not they are linearly independent. You essentially have to consider to say that a vector is linearly. So, for example, to say that given a set of vectors v1 to vk, to say that they are all linearly independent, you need to prove that for all vi in v1 to vk, okay, there does not exist any coefficient c1 to ck minus 1 such that vi equal to c1 times v1 plus c2 times v2 plus ck minus 1 times vk. Okay. Actually, I should get my, basically I'm taking the ith one, so I'll just say there are no coefficients c1 to ck such that vi equal to c1 plus v1 c2 plus v2 plus ck minus 1 vk minus 1 plus ck plus 1 vk plus 1. I'm sorry, no, VI. CK, VK. So I cannot write VI as a linear combination of the remaining K minus 1 vector. And you can't do this by saying, oh, I tried a couple of values for C1 to CK, they didn't work, so they are not linearly dependent. You have to say that there is no such C1 to CK. This is a reasonably hard thing. I can give you a huge number of vectors and say, do you think these are linearly independent, and you can keep staring at them. Okay? You can always say they are not linearly independent by giving a counterexample, but you need to find one. Okay? Now, for example, if in fact this is true, then all these are linearly independent. And so, if in fact I have a matrix which has v1, etc., vk as its row vectors, then its rank would be k. Or if I have a matrix which is a transpose of this, such that v1 to vk are its column vectors, then its rank will again be k. Okay? Now, whenever a matrix does not have full rank, that means it has linearly dependent dimension. Okay? Now, when I am asking you to find, is there, so suppose I give you documents which are described in 10,000 dimensional space, that means each dimension corresponds to a keyword. There are 10,000 keywords. Okay? And I'm asking you, can you find a 100 dimensional space in which these vectors can be represented, such that their variance is least affected, which is exactly what we asked for the fishes. These 100 dimensions don't have to be just a subset of the original 10,000 dimensions. All you want is these 100 dimensions are linearly described in terms of the original 10,000 dimensions. So when I'm asking that question, I'll argue, and I hope you'll follow me this, I'll argue that if I gave you, for now, for the purpose of argument, let's assume it's full rank matrix. That means I actually gave you a DT matrix which has, you know, which has basically 10,000 columns. Each document is a vector in 10,000. Each document is a vector in a 10,000 dimensional space. Okay? Suppose it turns out that this rank is 10,000. That means there are no linear dependencies. But I still want to not deal with all 10,000. I still don't want to deal with all 10,000. I want a new DT, NDT, which is of the same size as this guy, which is of the same size as this guy. That means it basically still has 10,000 columns, and you know, if there are, you know, 20,000 documents, then you still have 20,000 documents. But the rank is going to be 100. That's what I want to know. Do you understand what I'm saying? To reduce dimensionality, you don't need to reduce the number of rows and columns. What you need to reduce is the rank. Okay? So when I am asking for reducing, when I'm asking for reduced dimensionality representation of the data, then I'm essentially asking this question. Given a matrix M of rank R, find me a matrix M dash of rank R dash which is less than rank R, because nobody wants to increase the dimensions, most of us want to reduce them, such that M minus M dash, M differs, M is very close to M dash. And to define two matrices being close, you can talk about distances between matrices, just as you talked about distances between vectors. One reasonable way of defining distance between matrices is to take the corresponding elements, take their difference, square it, sum it. So you take uij minus u dash ij square, sum over all ij. So take the corresponding elements, their differences, square it, sum it. The reason you square it is you don't want to, you basically positive and negative differences are both differences. Okay? So now I have a well-specified problem. Before I was just talking about, let me reduce the dimensionality. Okay? Now what exactly am I doing? What I'm doing exactly is, given a matrix of a rank, I want another matrix of the same size as this matrix, another matrix of the same size as this matrix whose rank is only k. This is what I'm trying to answer. Okay? Now, if I'm, so to do that, it turns out that singular value decomposition is actually is a very useful thing. Because what singular value decomposition does is it actually gives you the original dimensions. Original 10,000 dimensions are made into a new 10,000 dimensions, a rotated and translated new 10,000 dimensions, such that in fact they are ranked. The first one is the most variance, second one is the second most variance, third one is the third most variance, and then if you want k dimensions, you just take the first k. You take, you want k plus 1 dimensions, you take the first k plus 1. Okay? So that's what, that's why SVD is useful. So for example, to answer this question, you can actually, basically using calculus, you can show that this minimum occurs for the SVD decomposition. That's why SVD is interesting. Okay? And once I get the SVD, then the way to get the k-dimensional version is to just zero out. So for example, if I have in my SVD, remember there was a FF, dt is df times FF times tf. Right? In fact, it should be tf dash. Okay? So this would basically have square root of lambda 1, square root of lambda 2, etc., square root of lambda k, which where k is hopefully the original dimensionality of the data. Now, these would all be in the order of the highest to lowest. These are all the positive square roots. So if I now want to only take three-dimensional version of this data, all I need to do is take this stuff, make them zero. Then go ahead and multiply df times this new matrix times df dash. I will again get a matrix. I will again get a matrix which is of the same size as my old one. Okay? But it has lower dimensionality. To show that this will work, I'll get back to these slides in a minute because I actually want to show it to you in MATLAB. This is a very important slide. We'll get to it in a minute. But you saw this slide. We'll get back to this too. But here, this is the matrix corresponding to our happy example, right? The databases and statistics example. Okay? Now, it turns out, actually, that if I were to take this matrix and do the SVD, singular value decomposition, and I'll show it to you. I didn't make it up. That it would be, this would be the DF matrix. This would be the FF matrix. This would be the TF matrix. So that if you multiply this by transpose of this, you'll get the original matrix. Okay? Now, if I want to get a lower dimensional representation of this, all I need to do is, suppose I want to get a two-dimensional representation, I want to zero these out. Okay? So I just zero them out. So I take a version of this matrix which has zeros in these diagonals. What? No, they're all, no, TF is, okay. So now I multiply this by this, I will get a matrix of the same size as before, but it's now going to have a less rank. It will only have rank 2, because why? I actually zeroed out the rest of the eigenvalues. Pretty cool, okay? Okay, now if I were to do this, you may not actually know. So for example, if I were to start with this matrix, it turns out this matrix has rank 6, which is not surprising because the highest rank it could have had is 6, right? Because it turns out one more theorem in matrices is a matrix can be seen as a set of row vectors or a set of column vectors. You can define the rank for the row vector. You can define the rank for the column vectors. They basically would both be the same. They would have to be the same because the matrix has the same things that are playing the role of row are also playing the role of column. Okay? So it turns out that in fact, from what I said, you know that if I have a matrix with 15 rows, you know its rank cannot be more than 15, right? If I give you 15 vectors, right, the maximum the rank would be is 15, because all 15 are linearly independent. It can't be more than 15. So if I give you a matrix of dimension 10 by 6, its rank cannot be more than 6. Right? Because this same matrix can be seen as these 6 column vectors or these 10 row vectors. Imagine these 10 row vectors have rank 7. What that means is that these 6 column vectors have to have rank 7, which makes no sense. You can't have rank higher than that. So you know the rank of a matrix is always less than or equal to its smallest dimension. Okay, in this particular case, this is as full as you can get. Basically, you are saying all terms are really linearly independent. They may be correlated, but they are not completely linearly dependent. Okay, now, and in fact, what it basically showed also is if you were to change the axis, if you were to change the axis, in the new axis, the data actually does have different singular values. This one is the most important dimension because it has 77. This one is second most. It has 69, 22, 13, 12, 4. So you know pretty much most of the variance is above this. This is so small, eigenvalue. Okay. So if I were to take this matrix and I reconstruct it using just two dimensions, that means I made everything other than the first two singular values zero, I would get this matrix. So you can eyeball this and this. You never get to really eyeball after doing LSI and a huge big matrix whether the matrices look good enough, right? But this is small enough matrix that you can say, yeah. So I wanted a 24 here, there's a 23. Yeah, that's kind of close. 21, 18, yeah, kind of close. No, sort of. Okay, now, if I were to reconstruct using four dimensions, I would get this. Clearly, this is closer to this than this. What is interesting is among all rank 2 matrices that you can construct, which are of size 10 by 6, this is the one with the lowest difference between the original matrix. Pretty amazing. That's why you need calculus. Right? I mean, you can always say this is smaller than this, but you want a minimum. To get the minimum, you need to look for the places where the gradient becomes zero and then try to prove to yourself that that's also actually a local max. That's a global minimum. Okay? So I will send you, for those of you who are sort of mathematically inclined, I'll send you the proof that SVD is actually the minimum, the way to construct this, compute this minimum. For the rest of you, you know, if you understand what's going on, that's good enough. Okay, so this is rank 2. Among all rank 2 matrices, this is the best one. Among all rank 4 matrices, this is the best one. Okay, now, if that is the case, then what am I going to actually do LSI for? Is my interest take this matrix and construct this matrix? No. It turns out that I never really need to construct this matrix. In the fishy example, all I really needed to do is, given a new fish, I just take its size. Because the new dimensions are size and length minus width. So I just take its, the fish's coordinates in the new space and take the vector similarity in the new space. Okay? So, going back here, original reduction was this. So this is your DF matrix, this is your FF matrix, I'm sorry, this is your FF matrix, this is your TF matrix. Okay? If you wind up zeroing out these, okay, and you multiply, then the DF, so notice that DF will be multiplied by FF and then multiplied by TF. So in fact, the best way to think about this is the DF times FF is the coordinates of the documents in the new space. Is the full coordinates of the documents in the new space. So for the fishes, this would have been the new x dimension, the new y dimension, the new z dimension, etc. Now that I have the coordinates in the new space completely, if I just want to take the first two dimensions, the most important two dimensions, those will be the first two dimensions, because I am ranking the dimensions in the order of their variance. Okay? When I do this, if I do these zeros, then what happens? When I multiply this by this, I will essentially get a two-column representation of each document, which is not surprising. Because if I were to ignore one of the axes for the fish, then now each fish has only one coordinate, which happens to correspond not to length, not to width, but length plus width. Okay? And similarly here, these documents now, their best representation in the two-dimensional space, the best two-dimensional representation of these documents happens to have these coordinates. Okay? Now I can compute, if I were to remove these other dimensions, I'm doing one thing, which is I'm getting rid of noise. The other thing, I'm essentially taking the most important dimensions and taking the cosine theta value between the most important dimensions, the vectors of the in that most important dimensional space. Okay? Now, if I do this, it turns out that this, if I were to do this, that's what I'll get. So for example, if you look at just the numbers, not the D2 and D1, these numbers correspond to the top 10 documents, the 10 documents represented as points in the two-dimensional space. So basically, it's these points. These points, you can go back and check, look like this, which is kind of nice, because we do realize that 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 are the database guys, and 8, 7, 6, 9, they're all the statistics guys. Up front, it didn't look that they were different from each other, but in this space, you'll notice that all the database guys are here, so their angles are closer, the angles are smaller, which means cosine theta would be higher. Right? And then for a guy from this cluster to the guy from this cluster, the angle will be big, which means cosine theta would be smaller, which means similarity will be less, which is exactly what we wanted. Even more beautifully, now if I have a query, by the way, this is probably the most dense class, and I'll repeat all of this next week, next class, okay? So what you have to do is follow this, go back, read the slides, and then we'll discuss it again. Okay. So if you were to have two new queries, one query is a document D1, which is basically database 50 times. And D2 is a document which contains SQL 50 times. So this capital D1 basically has 50 in this column and zeros everywhere. Okay, and then capital D2 has 50 in this column and zeros everywhere. Those two documents, by normal vector similarity metric, would have zero similarity, because one of them is in the first dimension and it has zero projections everywhere else. The other is in the second dimension, it has zero projections everywhere else. And so you would say they are basically zero similar. And yet you would like to believe, given these documents, that database and SQL are sort of connected. And so if you were to actually throw these documents into this space, they would look up here and here, which is beautiful, because that actually shows D1 and D2, despite their superficial distaste for each other, are actually pretty close. Okay? So that's latent semantic indexing. And in fact, to get this D1 and D2 into this space, so basically what you would wind up doing in terms of using of LSI is, given a query, so first you go ahead, take the DT matrix, do the SVD analysis, take just the top K, whatever is your K you feel like, okay, and you know, basically keep only the representation in the top K. You don't have to recompute the new matrix. All you really need to know is, in the top K dimensions, what are the document's coordinates. Given a query is in this space. you need to compute that query's representation in this space. That would then have its own representation in this space, then you compute the vector similarity. Okay? To do that, basically, so when the queries come, so there are two ways of doing this. One is, whenever the query comes, you can add the query to the DT matrix, do the SVD, and then query also got shifted along with all the documents into the new space, and you just take the similarity between the two column version of the query and the two column version of all the documents and see which is the closest. It's a completely dumb idea, because that means for every query you're going to do an SVD, and SVD is n cube operation. Okay, it's a cubic operation in the size of the matrix. You don't want to do it all the time. Okay, a separate thing to do is, let's assume that the vector, the new coordinates are determined just by the documents themselves, and the query is then separately brought into this new space. Okay, to do that you need to know what to do to the query, and it turns out, and we'll talk about it again next time, that if you were to multiply Q by the TF matrix, remember the TF matrix was this, if you were to multiply the Q by TF matrix, then you will get its DF representation. Okay, so that's what I'm saying here, and next class I'll again go through it. So if you were to multiply Q times TF, then you will be, that will be equal to DF version of Q times FF, which will be its new coordinate representation. Very easy. So all you need to do now is remember TF. Okay, and whenever a query comes, multiply it by TF, take the first k dimensions, and then do the vector similarity. This is LSI. Okay, I have 15 more minutes. What I'm going to do today in 15 minutes is to actually try and show you, and not that it will give you any more insight, but show you that these numbers can be computed using MATLAB, and make some more points about regularities in SVD. And then I hope you'll come back with a large number of questions next class, or just not come at all. Okay, hopefully not the second one. We'll talk about as much as needed about LSI. Okay, so let's do some MATLAB. Okay, so this is MATLAB. How many of you have used MATLAB? Okay, good. So, in fact, I may or may not actually make you use them on the homework. If I make them use you, that's because I'm being nice to you. Okay, because the alternative is to make you find the eigenvalues yourself by hand, and that can be painful. Okay, so here, I have, in this MATLAB, I have put in DT. This, I hope you will remember, is this matrix that I've been talking about. In case you have forgotten it already, you've forgotten it already, there. 24, 21, 9, 0, 0, 3, right? So that's the same matrix I'm keeping, 24, 21, 9, 0, 0, 3. So I just entered this matrix already into the MATLAB, okay, DT. So now, let's see, if I were to take DT times DT dash, so DD equal to DT times DT dash. DT dash is basically the transport of the matrix in MATLAB. So that's your DD. That's your DD. And DD is going to be a 10 by 10 matrix, because there are 10 documents. Okay? Now, how about TT? TT is equal to DT dash times DT. Because DT dash becomes TD times DT is TT. Right? That would be a 6 by 6 matrix. Furthermore, do you see that this matrix is symmetric? It's a 2391, 2391, 1308, 1308. Symmetric, has to be, right? And similarly, the DD matrix is also symmetric. Okay, 1023, okay, Sushovan is complaining about something. So 1023, 1023, and 669, 669, etc. The good thing about it is the DD and TT are the best of the matrices you can have. These are positive symmetric matrices. And it so happens that when you take their eigenvalues, they will always be positive, real values. Okay? Because eigenvalues can be complex. You know this, right? Because you generate, the way you did it from like first principles is to make the characteristic equation for a 2x2 matrix, for example, you will get a quadratic equation. And you know that quadratic equation can have complex roots. Okay, in general, any equation can have complex roots. So, however, you know that for the real symmetric matrices, positive symmetric matrices, it's for sure that you will have positive eigenvalues. Okay, so now what I'm going to do is I'm going to, let's see, Eig DD. That would be the eigenvalue decomposition of DD. Okay? And it will only give me the eigenvalues. Okay? Now, if I were to take square root of Eig DD, I got 77, 69, 22, 13, and if you would remember what we were doing last time, if you remember what I was doing last time, here, 77, 69, 22, those are the singular values. Okay? And furthermore, in fact, an eigenvalue decomposition gives both the, I'm doing DD, right? To DF and DF and DL equal to Eig DD, square root to Eig DD. So what I did basically is this one, in fact I should have done, so what, when I do eigenvalues decomposition in the MATLAB, it needs to send back two values, two matrices. One matrix which is a diagonal matrix that corresponds to the eigenvalues themselves, another matrix, a non-diagonal matrix that corresponds to the eigenvectors. Okay? Remember, I wanted the eigenvectors for the DD matrix because that becomes the DF matrix. And I wanted the eigenvectors for the TT matrix, that becomes the TF matrix. And I just want the eigenvalues for either of them because they'll be the same. I'll take the square roots, those become the singular values. Okay? Fine. So in fact, actually, this is your DF matrix. This is your DF matrix. I will show that again using SVD, but I'm just doing it piece by piece by piece right now. You know, MATLAB has SVD built in, so I could have just done by saying SVD of this DT matrix, and you would have given me the three matrices. I'm just trying to show you that I'll get the same thing if I go by the definition, which is eigenvalue decomposition of the DD and TT matrices. Okay. Okay, so that's for that. And then how about TT? Eig TT. Is that if you take square root of Eig of TT, exactly the same numbers. Okay, I'm not making anything magic. It's obvious that's the way it would be because the matrix is basically, the columns and the rows of the matrix are intricately connected. Okay, now what's interesting is that, remember I said, so one of the interesting points, okay, so let's do SVD now. Okay, so SVD will give me DF, FF, TF, three matrices equal to SVD of DT. Okay, so this is your DF matrix. Okay, this is your FF matrix, 77, 69, 22, 13, 12, blah, 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 and then this is your TF matrix. Okay, now I said DF is the eigenvectors for the document, DD matrix. What is interesting about eigenvectors? Eigenvectors generate an orthonormal system. That means each vector is orthogonal to every other vector. Okay, so if I were to take an orthonormal matrix, So I have a matrix, you know, orthonormal matrix, where I have V1, V2, Vk, such that each of these are orthogonal to each other. Okay? And I multiplied it by On dash, so that I'll get V1, V2, Vk. This is On transpose. Just a second. If I were to do this, what do you think happens? I'm always, the way I compute the matrix multiplication, row by column would be this number. What? It will be an identity matrix. Because entire diagonals will be 1s and everything off diagonal will be 0. That's how you know that you have an orthonormal basis. Yes, what's the question?
So, I mean, the eigenvectors are mutually orthogonal?
Yeah.
Is it the original matrix is symmetric, right? Or is it for all
symmetric? No, it's always orthonormal basis. Eigenvalues don't have to be real. Okay. It's normally the eigen decomposition gives it such that the vectors are normalized. That's the normal eigen decomposition. In fact, apparently that was one of the mistakes you guys made in the homework. So many of you did not normalize the vectors. You know, normally if to give a basis, you give the normalized vectors in the basis. Okay, so let me check whether that is true. Df times df prime. There are some minus zeros, that's okay, because of the floating point errors, but really it has 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, everything else is 0. Okay? Tf times Tf prime, again a orthonormal vector, orthonormal matrix. Okay, so now finally, if I were to take Df times Ff times Tf prime, which are the three matrices I got from SVD. SVD sends it out as TF, but I need to take TF prime because DF times FF will become DF, DF times FT would become DT. Right? So I take the transpose of TF. Okay? If I were to do this, I better get the original matrix back. There you go. 24, 21, 9, some negative zeros, and a 3. Exactly what we started with, modulo some floating point error. Okay, now the last thing before you get to go is notice FF, right? FF is this factor space. So think of basically DF and DF times FF would be the coordinates of the documents in the factor space. And similarly, FF times TF prime would be the coordinates of the terms in the factor space. So in some sense, one of the interesting things, if you remember the Fishi's, when the coordinate got changed in the Fishi dimensions, size becomes a coordinate in the new, becomes a new vector in the new coordinate axis. Size itself is an arbitrary vector in the new coordinate axis. And width itself, sorry, not size, the length. And width itself is a coordinate, is a vector in the new space. Okay? So original terms, the original axis become normal vectors in the new space. Okay? So the thing that I want to do now is to reduce the dimensionality. The great thing we have is the dimensions are listed in the order of reducing variance. Okay? If I want to keep exactly two dimensions, okay, then I need to zero this, 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 and this out. Okay? So I'll do that. NF equal to FF. So now I have defined a copy of the matrix FF. Now NF 3, 3 equal to 0. NF 4, 4 equal to 0. NF 5, 5 equal to 0, NF 6, 6 equal to 0. So now NF basically has only these two guys. Right? I just zeroed them. So now if I were to take DF times NF instead of FF times TF prime, I'll get 25, 17, 9. In fact, 75, 17.8, 9.66. That was one of the two things that I shown you Okay, but remember that this you will never do. It turns out that this matrix, as crazy as it looks, if you were trying to find a two rank matrix of the same size as your DT matrix, such that this two rank, so if I just said give me a two rank matrix of the same size as the DT matrix, that's easy. Do you see that? Because you take x and y and put everything else, x plus y, x minus y, 2x plus 2y, etc., x and y coordinates. Okay, getting just a two rank matrix of the same size as the original matrix, anybody can do it. Getting a two rank matrix of the same size as the original matrix, whose distance from the original matrix is the minimum among all possible matrices. If you were to do it by brute force, you will never be done, right? Because there are infinite number of these matrices. Okay, this is where calculus comes to aid. Just a second. Okay, so this basically is your two rank matrix, best two rank approximation to the original matrix. But as I said, you'll never really compute this. All you really need is DF times NF. That is the first two coordinates of the DF times FF matrix. If you take DF times FF, you would get this big matrix. Now if you see, this is the same as this, this is the same as this, everything else was zeroed out. That's obvious because I just, diagonal matrix, I zeroed out the rest of the diagonal elements. So this is essentially picking the first two dimensions in the new space and making them the coordinates for the vector. Okay? And then finally, the last thing is, if I have a database 50, and remember database was the first dimension. Okay, so a query which has 50 for database, okay, and zeros for everything else would be this, Q equal to 50, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, right? Yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. This is my new query. All I need to do is take Q times TF and take the first two. That would give me the coordinates of Q in the new space. That is minus 36 and 13. And you'll notice that is sort of not too far away from minus 30 and 11, minus 30 and 10, and so on. That's why this query wound up being close to the database event. Okay? We did a lot today. I just hope you go back, read it all, and you know, ask me questions as I walk out, because we do have to vacate this room. Okay, I do want to take your questions, but ask me as I'm walking out. And then please read this before you come to next class and ask me as many questions as you have. If you have no questions, I'll move on to the next class. Okay. What? The I can do it. Some of you.